This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening. Welcome to Teachers Talk Radio and tonight's Late Late Show, which will be hosted by me, Amy Edwards. This week, we'll be looking at why some fictional teachers are so beloved and what we can learn from them and apply to the real world of teaching.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Teachers Talk Radio. As I said, my name is Emily Edwards. For any recurring listeners, welcome back. It's good to chat to you again. And if this is your first time with me, here's a little bit about my background in education. So I'm currently teaching secondary history as a full-time classroom teacher. I started my NQT year back when it was called an NQT year in 2017, and I have an NPQML as well as experiences in middle leadership, both in temporary positions as a pastoral deputy head of sixth form and curriculum lead for history, though thankfully not at the same time. I also have experience in teaching Key Stage 3 to 5 for history and Key Stage 5 or A-level politics. So welcome to tonight, something that has always kind of interested me and I think impacted teaching for better or for worse, is the public perception of us as workers and the perception of the profession as a whole. I know we've talked about some of the stereotypes of teachers in the past on the show. Do obviously feel free to check out some of the past shows on Podbean or on Teachers Talk Radio website to catch up on those ideas. So there's no shortage of stories in the news about the rise of disrespect towards teachers from all levels of society, from the students we teach all the way up to the government itself on occasion. And we could focus all on those negatives, but tonight I wanted to instead look at some of those more positive perceptions, look a bit on the bright side, and think about the best teachers society could probably think of and how they could be used as a way to positively reflect the profession, as well as give us some inspiration as to how to challenge some of those more negative stereotypes along the way. So I think regardless of a person's experience in the classroom, I think we could all name probably one fictional teacher at least. And hopefully, if asked, these would all be an idealized version of what a teacher is. And that reflection of the profession in a really positive way and potentially in the best possible light. So who are these fictional heroes of the classroom? Why are they so adored by audiences? And what can we apply from their example to the real world of teaching? That is what we're going to be addressing tonight. So apart from some of my own examples on a kind of a top 10 list, I'll also be sharing some of your answers to my Twitter or X poll to that same question and discuss some of those ideas. As always, if you have any of your own favourites that you'd like to add into the chat as we go, please feel free to share them and the reason why they're a firm favourite for you as a teacher.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
You are listening to Teachers Talk Radio News, and here is a roundup of some of the main stories over the past 7 days. On the eve of the National Education Unions Conference, which runs in Bournemouth from the 3rd to the 6th of April, it looks increasingly as though a ballot on strike action will be taken. An indicative ballot in which over half the members of the union participated showed 9 in 10 in favour of a ballot on strike action. Daniel Kabedi, General Secretary of the Union, indicated that if conference votes in favour of strike action, it will be serving notice to this government and future governments rather than ensuring that strikes did happen. However, he also outlined his belief in the gravity of the current crisis facing education in an interview with Radio 4's Today programme.
There is a mood of desperation, if we're being honest. The profession is very much on its knees. Morale is at an all-time low. And of course, we can see that in the crisis in recruitment and retention. 9% of the teaching profession left the profession last year prior to retirement. The government is continually missing its recruitment targets for new teachers. We missed it by 50% for secondary teachers this year. Quite simply, if we continue on this direction of travel, education will grind to a halt.
Other teachers' unions, including the NASUWT, have indicated they will not be holding a ballot on strike action. However, Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NASUWT, has called for the replacement of the School Teachers Pay Review Body, or the Independent Pay Review Body as it is known, with a Teachers Pay Commission, stating that the current pay review body is not independent, since its remit is set by the government and its members chosen by the government. And this year, the pay review body has been told by the government that it must set a pay level lower than last year and focus on shortage subjects. In other news, this week, Amanda Spielman gave her first interview since leaving as head of Ofsted. On the Difficult Women podcast, she was asked by interviewer Rachel Johnson, while reflecting on her career, about the death of Ruth Perry. Much loved and dedicated head teacher Ruth Perry had committed suicide after an Ofsted inspection, which the coroner had characterised as brutal and insensitive. Spielman said that the inspection had been carried out exactly as it should be. There was nothing wrong with the inspection, but, she noted sadly, it is at times difficult to tell people tough messages. And she compared the Ofsted process with its single word, judgments, as being similar to a driving test, which no one likes to fail. This week, the website Teacher Tab, which regularly carries out surveys into teachers' attitudes and opinions, surveyed teachers' reaction to the Dame Sarah Kahn report into threats to public cohesion, in which she'd suggested the possibility of exclusion zones around schools of 150 metres. This came in reaction to groups of parents demonstrating outside schools in reaction to what they perceived as insults to religion among the staff. 58% of teachers surveyed thought this was a good idea. 48%, though, said yes, but the exclusion zones should not exclude teachers' unions or striking teachers. In another Teacher Tap survey this week, the website reported that over 20% of teachers had seen evidence of cheating using artificial intelligence. This was up from 6% last year. Teachers' views were also surveyed in an NASUWT poll that was reported in the Independent newspaper. In a survey of thousands of teachers, 9 out of 10 stated that stress and workload had had an adverse effect on their mental health, and 12% said they used alcohol to cope. In some powerful interviews, other teachers described vomiting before work and having cried at work in reaction to student behaviour and stress. This follows the widely reported news item on the BBC, which said that 1 in 5 teachers in England had been hit by a pupil in the previous year, and teachers reporting that spitting, swearing, and chair throwing were happening often. This week, the website Education Uncovered, led by the investigative reporter Warwick Mansell, reported the story of Sir Paul Marshall, chair of the Ark Schools Academy Trust. Sir Paul, multi-millionaire hedge fund manager and co-owner of GB News, was reported by the organisation Hope Not Hate, which confronts hate speech in the media, as having retweeted, either casually or thoughtfully, a number of the most extreme Islamophobic and homophobic tweets. Union members at ARC Schools have called for him to resign, as no longer fit and proper to be associated with education. And Labour MP Sam Tarry has urged the ARC Trust to sever links with Sir Paul. So far, they are standing by him. And finally, in a widely reported story which appeared in The Guardian and on the BBC and in the Independent newspaper, parents at a Boyne primary school in Aberdeenshire were furious after the photographer, Tempest Photography, issued two sets of photographs of the children. One, where the pupils with additional needs had been removed. Parents received an apology from the local council, which said the decision had not been taken by the school and the link to the photographs had been removed. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news for this week. You can find archived interviews of Daniel Kabidi, the General Secretary of the NEU, in-depth discussion and analysis of the role of Ofsted in many past Teachers Talk Radio programmes, as well as the weekly teacher review on Sunday mornings on YouTube. Thank you for listening.
As with many of my show's topics, I came across the idea for tonight's show in particular when I was having a discussion with my partner Andrew, and we were talking about terrible fictional characters, why we hated them, why they got under our skins, just having a bit of fun. And when we were discussing one of his most hated kind of characters, Dolores Umbridge from Harry Potter, I'm sure that'll draw an ire from some of the audience if you're Harry Potter fans. But as we were starting to talk about her in particular, I think the conversation started to move towards some of the more terrible examples of teachers in the media. Always try and sneak in a chance to talk about work where possible. And whilst I thought this could make for a very entertaining idea to talk about the worst depictions of teachers in film and media, and it may very well appear as a bit of a part two based on how much I enjoyed researching for tonight's show. But ultimately, I kind of asked him at the end of his rant if there are any good teachers at Hogwarts, since I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, and I thought there's got to be somebody at that school who's there for the kids. And as he was explaining that there were a couple of very good teachers, and I won't spoil anything for my top 10 list in a minute as to what we decided on. And I thought actually it was a really interesting debate about what we thought good teachers in media looked like, why they were kind of popular, not just with him, but generally with audiences, why they resonated so much. And in essence, whether or not they were actually great teachers or just really fun characters. So in my list, I went for kind of more traditional options of fictional teachers in a fictional school, as well as a couple of unconventional teachers as well. Surprisingly, Star Wars came out in our one-to-one discussion and also in some of our research as having some of the best and worst teachers that we could probably think of. So, as we jump into it tonight, rather than having lots of different sections talking about maybe one or two examples, what I wanted to do instead was to change up the format slightly and to do, in essence, a top 10 list. Who are, in my opinion, the best fictional teachers in media? Why did I want to add them to the list? And what can we learn from them that we can actually apply to our own practice? Some of the ideas may be very straightforward. Some of them may be ideas that we may not have thought of, due to the nature of some of these teachers. So before I jump in, I do want to say that this is just my personal opinion. And if you do have any teachers, fictional teachers, I say, that are left out that you think deserve to be in this top 10, please let me know in the chat as we go.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
So, at number 10, we have got Qui-Gon Jinn, the enigmatic and steadfast Jedi Master in the Star Wars saga. So, I think this one probably is a little bit unconventional, as I did warn you in the preamble. But I think that of all the different Star Wars teachers that we could come across and talk about tonight, one aspect that I think us as real world teachers can learn from Qui-Gon Jinn is this importance of perseverance in teaching. The character faces numerous challenges throughout his journey, and yet he remains completely steadfast in the commitment to the training of the fictional character, Obi-Wan Kenobi, his Padawan. And I think it's interesting that obviously in teaching, we hopefully don't come across Sith masters or, you know, Sith assassins, things like that in our day to day. But this idea of those challenges that we face in the classroom, either from sometimes difficult students or if we have lots of jobs in our to-do list from SLT, from head teachers, from other colleagues, or if we just have a very busy time in our lives and we're trying to balance work and home responsibilities, keeping that perseverance to what matters, to the core focus of we are here to do the best job possible for our students within the parameters that we have, and we just make the most of, say, that 40 minutes, 50 minutes, hour, 2 hour lesson that we have with our students that day. And I think furthermore, kind of building on this, Qui-Gon's kind of deep connection to the Force really underscores the kind of significance of intuition and mindfulness that we can actually apply to education. And that idea of trusting your instincts and encouraging, obviously, your students not to listen to the Force per se, but to guide them on that path of self-discovery, of realizing what we're trying to teach them and how that links to what we've taught them before, making those connections that really make the content that we teach stick and have a more real world application that they might not see at the start of the lesson. And ultimately, by fostering this sense of awareness and connection to something greater than themselves within the Star Wars universe, Qui-Gon as a teacher instills this profound sense of purpose and direction in his students that very much is something that will resonate with many teachers, obviously, going into the profession to make that difference and help support students day in and day out. So the one thing that I do like about Qui-Gon Jinn, which isn't something that can really be applied to a lot of teachers on a day-to-day, I know, shock horror, is that he has a ridiculously high level of autonomy within the Jedi ranks, and that allows him to have this flexible approach to his teaching style, to what he obviously communicates as important or unimportant. And I think ultimately, as teachers, we do have to accept there are going to be some limitations. Obviously, we can't just go off the rails and teach something that we're really passionate about but has no bearing on the curriculum that we set out for students, or goes off on a massive tangent that doesn't really support students' learning, even though it's something that might interest us. So whilst I like Qui-Gon Jinn as a fictional teacher and thought it's a really interesting approach to teaching, this idea of using your gut, of instilling a path of purpose for students, overall, because he isn't the most realistic of examples for us to use, we do obviously have to keep him at number 10 rather than keeping him or pushing him rather at a higher level. So ultimately, I think we can learn, though, the ideas of cultivating perseverance in the face of challenges and foster a classroom environment that encourages self-discovery, mindfulness. So who then is number 9? Any Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans will be pleased to know that Rupert Giles is on this list. He's the erudite and resourceful librarian and watcher in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he serves as a mentor and guide to the young Slayer and her friends. Whilst his role may extend beyond traditional teaching, Giles offers valuable lessons in the importance of standing up for what is right. So the reason I added this character to my list as number 9 is that he's a really good example of resourcefulness and supporting students through adversity and helping students adapt their approaches to challenges in a way that is still authentic to them and their skills. So as the watcher to Buffy and her friends, Giles will obviously face numerous challenges and threats throughout the series. And yet he is committed to obviously ensuring the safety of those he's mentoring and ensuring that not only the physical safety is there and is protected, but also that especially Buffy as a character, her mental well-being is also supported throughout the show. Giles' ability to think quickly on his feet as well and provide guidance and support in challenging circumstances is a really good example for us as educators, as unusual as some of those challenges might be, to deal with coming up with more creative solutions to very traditional problems. So I know the first thing that comes to my mind of an adverse situation is probably teaching year 9, last thing on a Friday afternoon before a school holiday. But coming up with innovative ways to deal with that challenge, so it might be obviously reframing how I view that class, it might be focusing on the positives, so rather than focusing on that one student who won't stop talking, that low-level disruption, I focus on the 28 other students in the room who are working diligently, that are listening, that are engaged. I might go, well, if I put in X, Y, Z in terms of behaviour policies, obviously that will depend on your school, then I can ensure better results, or I can maybe address the expectations I have and make it really clear to the students what I need them to complete in that lesson, a bit like a checklist, to help make potentially a very long lesson on the end of a school term feel a bit more manageable. So those different solutions that may not be the first things that come to mind are ways that obviously we're adapting to those challenges in a real world setting. But that is something that we see in fictional teachers in media as well, which is, I think, a real positive to see in media that this is being represented. It's not just very formulaic as a job. It is very adaptive, and it does involve teachers and professionals having to think on their feet. So furthermore, Giles' role as a mentor and a confidant underscores the significance of building trusting working relationships with students and fostering open communication. So whilst Giles as a character himself is quite reserved and his demeanour is potentially seen as a bit more withdrawn than the rest of the cast that are a bit more extroverted, Giles does genuinely care for Buffy and her friends, and he doesn't want them to fail, obviously. In the theme of the show, the failure there could result in much higher circumstances and consequences than what we would hopefully face in a classroom. But he still offers them guidance and support, and they navigate the complexities of not just the supernatural elements of the show, but also the real world situations involving grief, involving loss, involving heartbreak or changes in their personal relationships. And those complexities of adolescence are taken just as seriously sometimes as some of the more supernatural abstract threats. And his willingness to listen, to empathize and provide advice ultimately when needed highlights the importance of emotional intelligence and empathy in education. We're not just there to throw a lot of content at students and let them walk away from it. They are coming to the lessons ultimately to help develop themselves as young people and the next generation into the world. And so obviously providing that model for empathy, for understanding. I know obviously we can talk about for another hour or so the importance of working relationships and ensuring that students feel supported, not just academically, but also holistically, is always something that I like to see represented in media, that teaching isn't just the classroom, it is also the wider school aspect as well. It is important to note as well that no matter the amount of danger that he finds himself in, usually along with the students, he ultimately does try to keep a cool head. He never rushes to anger or to extreme emotions. And again, that emotional kind of regulation from us as professionals is also really important for us to take as a message, even though we aren't going to be pushed to the levels of extremes that we'll see on the show. It is important that we don't rise to challenges, we don't lose our composure, we keep that professionalism, because ultimately that consistency from our end helps not only to build the working relationships with students, but also helps us to maintain the professionalism that we'd expect as colleagues and as a school. However, he's not higher up on this list, no matter how nicely I've exposed all the messages that the show gives about him, because let's be frank, the amount of danger that he puts those students in, either intentionally or unintentionally, would most likely raise some questions from a DSL at the very least. So he's definitely not going to be the top of this list. But overall, Rupert Giles' character offers some valuable insights into mentorship, resilience, and the importance of building trusting relationships in education. We can learn from his example by cultivating that adaptability and resourcefulness when facing different challenges, fostering open communication and empathy, and ultimately providing guidance and support to students as they navigate the challenges of growing up. And that is something we can do both fictionally as teachers, but also in the real world. So my number 8 probably will not be a surprise to anybody. It usually is a character that winds up on these top 10 lists. And it is Mr. Miyagi for number 8. And he is from The Karate Kid. And his teaching style is deeply rooted in the principles of practice and focus. He emphasizes the importance of repetition and dedication, showing his student Daniel that mastery comes through persistent effort. It is not something that just happens. You have to work for it. You can already probably see why this character made it to this top 10 list and why it is a personal favorite for many. And through the mundane tasks, or seemingly mundane tasks, that Mr. Miyagi sets for Daniel of waxing cars, painting fences, he imparts the value of diligence and the rewards of hard work. It's never wasted. It is always building to something greater that helps his students to succeed later on in the film. And I think teachers can draw from this approach, obviously the idea that students need a sense of discipline and perseverance, and that we can teach them that success is achieved through consistent effort and dedication, not just a rocking up to the exam and giving it your best shot. It is that day by day revision plan, not just for our subject, but for all subjects, and building in bit by bit revision to ensure that students feel as confident as possible when they do the exam, say at the end of GCSE or the end of A-level. And I think that idea of consistency is really important in education. We know as a profession, it's always a marathon, never a sprint. And so encouraging that perseverance within students is something very important, both within the fictionalized classroom or dojo teaching world in that sense, but also in the real world as well. Also, just personally, I'm very fond of the use of a reveal to show students that what they've been doing has actually helped them understand a tricky concept all along. And some of the reveals that I've done in lessons that have worked really well is, especially for A-level, to break down essay writing and peel paragraphs. I've initially started off with a bit of reading and a table. And this table has various different columns, and it breaks down the points, the evidence. So what facts have you got to support that point? An explanation, why does this answer the lesson title, for example, that's always phrased as a question. Then evaluation, you know, how convincing is this argument, or is this the best argument, yes or no, and then a why column. And ultimately, by filling in this table, students have unintentionally planned out and partially written a full essay to, say, for A-level, a 20-mark answer. And this is something that really boosts students' confidence unintentionally afterwards, when you kind of reveal the surprise, you've actually written a full essay plan here without fully realizing it. And seeing it broken down into those steps and seeing students make the connections between the different parts of the acronym in an applied setting, so with the information and with the table, really helps, I think, to solidify the importance of doing those small repetitive steps, columns in the table, and seeing then the mastery of the overall skill, the crafting of analysis and evaluation at the end of it. So I've done this as well with sources. I've done kind of slow reveals of different parts of a story and then kind of revealed how it all fits together. All of those kind of fun reveals are something that I quite like in teaching, in terms of taking something abstract and putting it into practice. And there's something that Mr. Miyagi does incredibly well, obviously, in the film. And the wash on, wash off reveal is very much surprise for the character. But for us, it's very satisfying to see the build up to that overall mastery of the skill through those repeated actions. And furthermore, Miyagi teaches his students to find inner strength amidst adversity. He helps Daniel to navigate challenges both on and off the mat. And he imparts these lessons not just in resilience of kind of getting back up, doing it again, not giving up the fight, but also in self-belief. But ultimately, through that effort, by listening, by applying himself, Daniel can achieve his ultimate goal. He can succeed. And that supportive environment and encouraging students to kind of face their fears is a really important demonstration of resilience in overcoming obstacles, not just giving up at the first hurdle. I know in many schools currently across the country, there's an element of passivity, the idea that students don't immediately get the answer and so they won't tackle the question at all. And there are many different approaches we've talked about in terms of overcoming this, from kind of developing growth mindsets to scaffolding to kind of I do, we do, you do, breaking down how to address something to boost students' confidence. But ultimately, that element of self-belief has to come from the students eventually. We can't obviously sit that exam for them. We can't do the learning for them. And so creating an environment where students are encouraged to not just try, but also accept that sometimes they will fail. They will inevitably face some elements of failure, but that is going to be a teaching tool for them to succeed later on, is something that not just provides the academic success within the subject, but also a holistic lesson of the importance of resilience and the idea that failure isn't an end point, it is the start of the path to success. So ultimately, Mr. Miyagi exemplifies the value of this holistic approach to education, where the physical training intertwines with moral teachings, and so the academic side applies to as well the life outside of the classroom, the personal character of our students. And his mentorship extends beyond those martial arts techniques and encompasses more essential life skills and values that students within the film, but also within the classroom, can take past that learning environment. Ultimately, the idea of not just becoming knowledgeable, but also resilient individuals is a key lesson we can learn from this fictional character. And it's why I had to include them on my top 10 list at number 8. So then who beats out Mr. Miyagi? At number 7, it is Miss Honey from Matilda. So usually a firm favourite of many teachers in terms of inspirations, and usually a go-to example of a really wonderful teacher in comparison to Miss Trunchbull as the counterbalance to Miss Honey. And the reason why I think Miss Honey needed a place on this list, especially at number 7, is that her warmth and compassion shines at all times through her interactions with her students. And as a result, she creates and fosters this sense of belonging and trust. She advocates for Matilda throughout the book. She recognizes her intelligence and her potential, even in the face of backlash from Matilda's parents, and noticing, obviously, that potential should be encouraged rather than ignored for the easier option of leave her be, she'll be fine, her parents don't want to push it, and I will walk away. By nurturing this strong bond with her students, she creates this supportive community where each child feels valued and accepted. Matilda, as a character, really grows in the book and develops into her most authentic self because of Miss Honey's intervention, because of her support. And I think we can learn from this as teachers by prioritizing building positive relationships with our students and create this atmosphere of trust and mutual respect within our lessons. So Miss Honey's belief in the potential of every child really drives her teaching philosophy. And I think we all come into teaching with this idea of why, what is important to us, why do we come to work each day, why are we in teaching? And I think having a clear teaching philosophy in the same way Miss Honey does as a character is always valuable to us, not just when we are showing off ourselves at interview, or why we are, you know, the best teacher for that role, but also just on a day-to-day. Sometimes you will have rough days, you will have insecure moments, you might have a bit of imposter syndrome, and ultimately going back to this idea that we are good teachers because we care and we are willing to put in that effort for our students, and we want the best outcomes for our students is, I feel, that foundation that can help boost ourselves back up, dust ourselves off if we're having a rough day, and jump back into the fray. So I think Miss Honey in particular sees beyond surface level abilities. It's not just seeing Matilda as just another face in the crowd. She recognizes the unique strengths and talents of many of her students and provides, in Matilda's case, that personalized attention and encouragement to help her reach her full potential. Obviously, Miss Honey is a little bit more confusing as a character, because obviously by the end of the book, sorry for any spoilers, she will eventually adopt Matilda. And so obviously that develops a very different kind of working relationship that I do not encourage for any teachers listening. But I think the overall idea of seeing students as they are, so knowing our students, not just names on a register or faces in a crowd, but knowing if they have any additional needs, if they have different strategies that you've come up with that seem to help them, that aren't on any official plan, but you just know, for example, if you move, say, fictional person John to the front of the room, he focuses much better than if you put him at the back. If you, for example, put Diana next to Ravneet, they work really well as a pair and bring out the best in each other. By obviously knowing your students in that way, beyond just the very bare basics, just like Miss Honey, I think we can help to bring out the best in our students and develop that mutual respect that comes from we care about our students, we are authentic about our desire to be in teaching, we love our job. That then doesn't have to be articulated, but it comes through really organically, and students pick up on that and can really then respect the fact that you are trying to help them reach their potential, and they might be hopefully more willing to work with you to help them achieve that goal. So in conclusion, Miss Honey kind of embodies the essence of effective teaching through her kindness, her encouragement, and ultimately her unwavering belief in her students. She knows they can succeed. And we can learn from that example by prioritizing empathy, compassion, and creating that nurturing learning environment where every child feels supported and empowered to succeed. So then who could possibly beat out Miss Honey for the number six position? That is going to be a bit of a two-parter here. I was a bit unsure which way to go. I put Professor X slash Emma Frost. Now, the reason I put both is initially I was going to go for Professor X. Just him. But ultimately, I realised that the Xavier Institute has lots of kind of rotating staff members who provide teaching, and Emma Frost at different points leads the X-Men, or at least the Xavier Institute in different canons. You can make the same argument for kind of Cyclops or Jean Grey or Storm, but generally, I'll talk about the X-Men teachers as kind of a cohesive group, because they're all rolling in and out of the classroom and all provide a very similar role in terms of fictional teachers. So both of them, Charles Xavier and Emma Frost, are both prominent figures in the X-Men series. And as leaders of Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, the fictional school that takes place, obviously, in the X-Men universe, they provide guidance and support to mutant students who navigate not just their unique abilities, but also the wider challenges of societal prejudice. And so with that, I think one element that we can really learn from these fictional characters is the importance of creating a safe and inclusive learning environment where students feel fully accepted and valued for who they are. Obviously, within the X-Men kind of universe, the comics, the current theme, the recurring theme, I should say, is that mutants face discrimination from society and extensive prejudice due to their mutant abilities, being misunderstood, at different points being allegories for race or for sexuality or for gender expression. But ultimately, the core message stays the same, that Xavier School provides this sanctuary for students to develop their skills, embrace their identities, and have the opportunity to live a very authentic life by taking those skills and using them in and outside of the classroom. Now, I'm not encouraging my listeners to go into the classroom tomorrow and suggest that students start working on their mutant abilities and, you know, trying to use their eyes to create a laser, to blow a hole in the wall, or to telekinetically move tables around. I don't think really that's going to be very useful for my listeners, but I think the core idea of creating that environment within our classrooms in a real world context where students feel comfortable being themselves, so they don't have to worry about prejudice in the real world in any form. They don't have to worry about racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, etc. And as well, this idea generally of community. When students walk into the room, we are working together to learn about this topic. We are not laughing at students who give an answer that others may find in their opinion to be, you know, a silly answer or a stupid answer. My go-to is there are no stupid questions, there are no stupid answers. As long as students try, if they get it wrong, you know, I'm glad they got it wrong so we could address that so they can then learn from this. But also my go-to is that if one person is thinking that, they're not the only person. And so by being brave enough to share that with the rest of the room, take that risk, take that vulnerability, it provides a really useful learning opportunity where there may be 3, 4, 10 of the students in that room who had the same thought, who now also gets the benefits of that educational moment because students felt comfortable taking that risk and being authentic about what they do and don't know. And within, obviously, the fictional world, Professor X and the rest of the X-Men teachers emphasize empathy and understanding, and ultimately something that really does apply quite neatly into the real world, which is why I put them relatively high on the list, was that they recognize the diverse needs of their students. It's not a class of mutants who are all telekinetics, or telepaths or pyrokinetics, for example. They are all different in their abilities and therefore require potentially different approaches, different levels of scaffolding to help them achieve their full potential. And that tailored support, that scaffolding and guidance helps to give those students in the fictional world a great opportunity to overcome those obstacles. But also as well, we can take that into the real world and help students achieve their full potential by providing whatever appropriate scaffolding is necessary. As we've talked about in the past, whatever's both on the paper in terms of SEN or additional needs, but also as well based on our knowledge of students. If students are finding a particular topic difficult, acknowledging that first and foremost, and breaking it down for students to make it more accessible, rather than just expecting students to bridge the gap without the tools to do so successfully. And so in conclusion, Professor X and Emma Frost's characters offer this valuable insight into creating an inclusive and empowering learning environment, and that empathy and understanding allows students to embrace their identities and abilities that ultimately we can use to empower our own students, albeit not in the mutant sense. So halfway now on our list, we've got number 5 is Yoda. We're back to Star Wars. And yes, I know it's another Star Wars teacher, but I've noticed that this one seems to be the more popular answer when talking to people. So I thought I'd add him to the list. And Yoda serves as an iconic figure of mentorship and enlightenment in the Star Wars series. And despite his unconventional, shall we say, approach to learning and teaching, those non-traditional teaching methods on Dagobah, for example, are very famous. He imparts valuable life lessons to his students, most particularly Luke Skywalker, and allows them to develop a sense of self-discovery through his adaptive teaching and his mindfulness-first approach. So one aspect we can learn from Yoda is the importance of understanding a student's unique strengths and weaknesses and tailoring the instruction accordingly, and also ensuring that we do not lower our expectations regardless of the level of students that we are engaging with. So Luke initially appears unresponsive. He's not going to initially succeed. We've got that training montage on Dagobah, and ultimately, for any Star Wars fans out there, it's pretty obvious that Luke seems to do all right for himself by the end of the film. He is eventually a fully fledged master in that sense. So Yoda's approach to this is rooted in mindfulness and self-discovery, and that importance of students looking within themselves, not just allowing someone else to do all the hard work. They have to take that introspective approach, that reflective approach, to tap into their inner potential. So when we are going through exam feedback, for example, to create a real-world comparison, giving students the ability to understand exactly how to improve, how to succeed, and how to avoid making the same mistakes again by being more reflective in their writing or reading of their answers, really does help to ensure success academically, at the very least, if not also outside of the classroom, by taking a more reflective approach. Ultimately, Yoda empowers his students to become more powerful by overcoming obstacles without losing their sense of self. So in conclusion, Yoda is a very good teacher. He is better than Qui-Gon Jinn. He, spoiler alert, doesn't get himself killed by the end of the film, which is always a bonus, especially in teaching. But since he is a pretty obvious sort of character, I've left him at number 5. He doesn't really have too many unique real-world applications. So at number 4, we've got Edna Krabappel. Now, this is an unusual choice, I can imagine, for many listeners, because Edna Krabappel from The Simpsons is quite jaded. She's quite cynical. But I've put her at number 4 because she demonstrates a genuine concern for her students' well-being. And she really does help to impose some important life lessons in the series. And that, I think, makes her a fantastic teacher, and in essence, a very realistic teacher at times. So in the episode where Bart gets an F after actually studying for a history exam to avoid repeating his grade, initially, Mrs. Krabappel is quite cynical and uses a couple of jokes, thinking that he doesn't care about this result, like all the other tests, and she's taking it in good grace. But when Bart breaks down and demonstrates not only great upset at his grade, he genuinely cares about it, but then also applies the knowledge he did learn in a different way than what was expected on the exam, showing his actual understanding of the material because he can apply it to a situation, she immediately switches into a more caring tone and rewards the knowledge that he gives and the application of it with extra points that raises his grade up to a passing D. And this ability to adapt your approach to a situation is something that we all know builds really strong working relationships with pupils, because we show we care and we apply sanctions and rewards appropriately, and therefore not tyrannically. It is also important to note that Edna never becomes friends with Bart after this episode, and she doesn't just award him a passing grade because he starts crying. So the respect in that relationship remains intact. It just shows a genuine moment of connection with obviously Bart and Mrs. Krabappel, with student teacher, and the importance of using empathy and appropriate, not just sanctioning, but also rewards to show ultimately that we care about our students and that they can succeed, even if not in the most traditional circumstances. Also, we know that Edna Krabappel kind of continues to show up day after day, even though she is quite jaded with the profession. She has a lot of rambunctious students in her class as part of The Simpsons. And this idea of having a realistic view of teaching at times is something quite refreshing and is why she's quite high up on this list. The reason why I didn't put her at number one is because she doesn't always exemplify the ideal teacher. But ultimately, her character does offer valuable insights into the complexities of the profession and provides a good laugh from time to time. So number three is going to shock nobody. We are going into our top tier now. So John Keating, portrayed by Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. His classroom is not just a space for reciting facts from a textbook, but it's a sanctuary for exploration and self-discovery. He is pretty much the epitome that many people have of a fantastic teacher, because he introduces his students to not just the concept of poetry, but the power of it, igniting their imaginations and encouraging students to use it to express themselves more freely. One of his most memorable lessons involves the Latin phrase carpe diem, which means seize the day. And through this mantra, he urges his students to break free from societal expectations and embrace the opportunities that life presents. And taking the poetry, the reading, the prose, the contents, in essence, and applying it to the real world is something that we do have to acknowledge from time to time as teachers. Why should students care about the information we're giving them? How does this apply not just to the real world, not just to their everyday lives, but also to the bigger schema of their understanding of the world around us? In history in particular, history happens in cycles. We see events repeat themselves. How can students see that cycle, that pattern, and be able to engage with that more so in real time rather than just as a historical footnote that we look at in lessons. Moreover, Keating's emphasis on individuality empowers his students to think for themselves. And in a day, obviously, as we know, with social media, with greater fears about fake news and political extremism, this idea of a teacher, fictional or real, who encourages students to voice their opinions and to ensure they are based on what they know and what is factual rather than just what they feel on the day, even if they diverge from other people's opinions, is so important to develop a diversity of thought and foster intellectual curiosity. So we can therefore learn the lesson of having authentic enthusiasm for our subject from John Keating. His passion for his subject matter is really infectious, and it demonstrates the importance of having educators in the system who genuinely love what they teach and are willing to think outside the box and tailor their instruction to apply to what students really need from our lessons to create this love of learning. Overall, an absolutely fantastic teacher to put at number three. However, obviously, the idealism of it does not always fit with reality. And so that's why I didn't put him as my number one. So number two is Dewey Finn from School of Rock. This is an unconventional choice, another one for the list. And he was the unconventional substitute teacher who was in School of Rock. And he offers a unique perspective on education. And although they appear unorthodox, he is excellent at incorporating students into the lesson by knowing them and engaging them. So rather than just the general example, he goes out of his way to ensure that every single student, whether they are musically gifted or not, has a role in his larger project of that school band. And by capturing the students' attention, he ignites their curiosity and their creativity. They all feel invested because he took the time to know more about them and how best to engage them. He respects them as young people. Furthermore, he is an advocate for his students, so he is willing to get involved in the project himself. He's not just sitting on the sidelines. He is showing that authentic enthusiasm and willingness to get involved. Despite his initial motivations, he genuinely cares for his students' well-being, and he recognises their talents and promotes their potential. overall, I think, a great example of the transformative power of passion, creativity, and mentorship in education, not just for the young people in the room, but also for teachers. This idea we're constantly learning, we are constantly improving and creating that environment of a love of learning through, albeit more unconventional methods, puts him at number two. So that leaves our number one spot. And drum roll, not sure if you could hear that through the microphone, but it is number one, Professor Minerva McGonagall. Now, even though I'm not a massive Harry Potter fan, as I admitted, I think ultimately everything I've seen of Professor McGonagall, everything I've read about her, she is the stern but fair professor at Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry. And she is excellent. And obviously, being played by Dame Maggie Smith in the film really does help, need I say any more. But one aspect we can learn from her is the importance of setting high expectations for our students while still providing them with the necessary support to succeed. So despite this really strict demeanour, she genuinely cares for her students and ensures that they achieve not just academic success, but also that their well-being is fully supported to help them develop into better young people by being that role model herself. She challenges them and makes them strive for excellence in their studies whilst offering genuine guidance and encouragement. Her leadership qualities and commitment to upholding Hogwarts traditions highlight the significance of establishing clear boundaries and maintaining order in the classroom, whilst also ensuring that we don't fall apart in the classroom and things don't quite go right. We have those boundaries. We have those expectations to always lean back on. And ultimately, she creates this excellent balance between a conducive learning environment where students can thrive, as well as this genuine sense of belonging within the school and within her classes. So overall, Professor McGonagall offers some of the best effective teaching practices. She's a great teacher by the looks of it, as well as a great fictional example of what an educator is. Someone who sets those high expectations and helps students achieve that through proper support, guidance, and discipline. Overall, we can create that balance between rigor and compassion and foster that culture of excellence to empower students to achieve their full potential. So this was something that was reflected in my Twitter poll, getting 45% of the 118 votes. Obviously, in terms of other teachers that were on that list, Miss Honey and Yoda were kind of next highest, followed by Edna at the bottom. I think because of the attitudes that The Simpsons has with Edna's character being a little less consistent at times, that one does make sense. Some suggestions from other people were that Sister Michael from The Derry Girls should be on this list. I haven't watched The Derry Girls, as a bit of a reveal, I guess. So that's definitely now on my list to see if this is a really good example of a fictional teacher and whether or not to add her to hopefully another list at some point. So with that being said, thank you so much for tuning in again this week to listen to my show and participate in the discussion on Teachers Talk Radio. As always, I really appreciate the engagement both on Twitter, but also as well afterwards with various polls and various discussions we have on the show. I've said it myself and I will always say it every time it crops up. I love seeing people's responses and it's great to see people commenting, especially on that Twitter poll about some of their favourite teachers. I will continue to use some polls since they are, I think, a fantastic way to hear your opinions. So with that being said, I will see you in a fortnight's time for my next show. So do keep an eye on social medias for more details. And in the meantime, take care and I will see you again next time.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.